If you're listening to 1001 Album Club, where each episode we discuss a different album from Robert Emery's book, 1001 Albums Is Here Before You Die. All right, for this episode, we'll be talking about Ride, Nowhere. In the room, I have Rob.
It's still a me.
And John.
Yes, sir.
And on the line, I have Ben.
Present.
Nowhere is the debut album by British shoegaze band Ride, released on the 15th of October, 1990. The producer was Mark Waterman, and the genre is shoegaze, neo-psychedelic, and noise pop. I'm going to read from All Music Review, Andy Kelman. Nowhere seems to hold consensus as the second best record of the shoegaze era, and with very good reason. All of the common words, phrases, and adjectives commonly used with the short-lived subgenre fit properly here, and they're all positive, every one of them. Whirl, whoosh, haze, swirl, ad nauseum. This record holds all of these elements at their most exciting and mastered. But in the end, great pop records necessitate quality songs, which Nowhere delivers throughout. Undeniably, it's Ride's zenith. Dense, tight, hypnotic Seagull serves as a dynamic opener. After a couple of seconds of light feedback, bassist Steve Coralt kicks in with a rubbery line reminiscent of a certain Beatles song, which is soon followed by Andy Bell and Mark Gardner's guitar twists and the gentle and punishing drumming. After the upbeat kaleidoscope, the record falls into a tempo wall that instantly seems impenetrable and meandering. However, patience reveal a five-song suite of sorts full of lovely instrumental passages that are punctuated with violent jazz of manic guitars. The endless escalating polar bear is a high point featuring expertly placed tom rolls from Colbert. The tempo picks up for the closing vapor trail and wistful pop song with churning background guitars galore and mournful strings to close it out. All right, what do we think of Ride, Nowhere?
I enjoyed listening to it. That Beatles song you're referring to is definitely Taxman.
Yep.
And man, how many bands in like the last 12 years have lifted the Taxman riff that we've covered?
Good
like,
question.
At least four or five, you know?
Yeah, we had The Jam, and we had, what's the other band that was that
I can't,
was
off the that? Top of my head, I can't think of, but I know we've talked about bands other than The Jam and
wasn't
Ride.
Wasn't Replacements, was it?
Happy Mondays, for sure.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, like, yeah. There's just been so many that have had that riff.
Yeah, it's a real simple way to conjure that feeling, you know?
Totally.
Because it's like, it's a major, it lifts up, you know? Like, you're right there, it almost forces the listener to, like, want to sing it up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's also a sweet riff and not very hard to play.
Fair. Totally true. Yeah, I was interested in what you guys would think this week, into like shoegazing style. I mean, this one's
apparently the two greatest shoegaze records of all time in our rock block. This one I didn't give as much ears to as the other three records that we covered, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I was getting major Stone Roses vibes, and that was a record for me. I was familiar with this record, but I was not with that Stone Roses. And that Stone, when I started reading about them and they started mentioning, oh yeah, we just idolized Stone Roses and the Smiths, I was like, of course he did.
Of course he did.
Like, and then they did mention, you know, My Bloody Valentine and Spaceman 3 and Sonic Youth and other things like that. But I was like, so in the Stone Roses, like, vernacular. It just is a little more noisy, slightly less, you know, psychedelic than the Stone Roses, but has that same sort of vibe.
Those harmonies, especially on like Seagull and Kaleidoscope, those kind of Birdsey style harmonies with just the rest of the kitchen sink thrown in. I get those vibes. Stone Roses were pulling those things. Mm-hmm. Even Happy Mondays, you know. Yeah. This week was my introduction to Nowhere by Ride. I'd never listened to it before this week. In my listens this week, I enjoyed it, but this album has a bit of like a reverse bell curve for me. I feel like it starts strong and it ends strong, and at least in my experience this past week, it sags in the middle. It sags a little bit for me, mm-hmm. not to where I want to turn it off, but to where like I'll be listening to it and then I'll look up and it'll be like two songs later. I'm like, oh, I lost my attention there for a minute.
Yeah.
Well, and what volume are you listening to it at? I think that's what I learned about shoegaze, is that I don't like it if it's below a certain volume. Mm.
I ran the gamut. You know, I had it at a reasonable volume when I had it like on while I was making dinner, but then I definitely gave it its headphones, ear bleeding.
Yes.
Do.
Yeah. You know? I think shoegaze cranked up, you know, does things to your brain, you know, that I was wanting from, or was told that other albums do to other things.
Tinnitus.
Yeah, well,
we can talk about that on the next My Bloody Valentine.
Wait, yeah. You guys aren't all hearing that ringing?
Yeah.
Always, friend. Always.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But no, I hadn't really listened to what I had labeled as shoegaze before. I'd never heard of Ride. I'd never heard this album. And once you crank it up and you get that, like, swirl, whoosh, mm-hmm. you know, like, that I actually really enjoyed.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I was unclear on the term shoegaze. I thought it was from all the people that were standing in front of the stage, like not dancing, just kind of like morose. But mm-hmm. I heard that that's not correct. Yeah, I heard
it's the ding dong staring at their pedals so they can.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you got to look at your pedals.
Hit the stuff.
Yeah, it's the massive amount of effects for the pedals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, many of the bands that were doing this, and they got a lot of that from Jesus and Mary Chain.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus and Mary Chain were the non-active, you know, participants on stage where they just cranked it up to 11 and just stared at their feet for most of the set, you know, and sang their songs. Whereas that was like cool, you know, which I think they kind of got that from the Velvet Underground. Mm-hmm. If you want to trace it back that far, although I would probably assume that the Velvet Underground was on acid and, you know, completely in outer space when they're playing those songs.
Or heroin.
Or heroin.
And that was more attitude, less pedals.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, this is
yeah.
The name comes from, I mean, yes, it sort
it's
of
a went, dig.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's about pedal usage, right?
It's them. Yeah. Just looking at their feet so they can, you know, hit the next effects pedal or change that up. So
how do you feel?
Shy. I mean,
right. Exactly. Like, I mean, I think they go hand in hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The name is, yeah. I always thought it was shy or morose, mm-hmm. but but it just happens that the people that are playing music to the, using the pedals are all shy and morose.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
1,000 times. Yes.
Prior to recording the album, Blackwig Studios in London, Bell had spent his advance from Creation on replacing a modest ES-335 copy and a Vox transistor amp with a Gretsch Tennessean, two Rickenbacker 12 strings, a Hiowa head, and a Marshall cab. Most important for Nowhere's jangly cloud, though, was a rack effects processor, Roland GP-16, which, according to Bell, was, quote, like a third arm to both guitarists. They became a really big part of the Ride sound. You could program a really complicated multi-effects for one song and then just turn it on with one switch. I did look at those, and they still go for $150 to $200.
The GP-16s?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's one on eBay for $160 right now.
Are you saying that he traded the ES-335 for that whole grocery list of gear?
It was a copy of an ES. 335.
He traded a copy mm-hmm. of an ES-335 for two Rickenbacker 12 strings, a Hiwa amp, and whatever else you said.
Marshall cab. Yeah, yeah. But he had the advance from Creation Records.
Yeah. Also money.
Okay.
Yeah.
Also money.
Yeah. That and money.
Yeah. It was not just a straight swapsies. He swapped it out by using money.
The 335 is like, it's the fanciest guitar Gibson makes. So you could definitely get some of that stuff. But I was like, man, even considering that is one heck of a trade.
Yeah. I was just very impressed. You know, they were just like, no, we're getting Rickenbacker. 212 screens, 212 strings, please. They just like spent all their advance.
Can't play Vapor Trail without two Rickenbacker 12 strings. Yeah.
That's the sound.
There you go.
That's the sound. And that, Rob, is where the jangle meets the thick. You got to have two Rickenbacker 12 strings playing in unison.
One's the jangle, one's the thick.
Yeah.
Put thick. Them together.
No, jangle plus jangle equals thick jangle.
So it's a thunk thunk.
You jangling, baby.
Yeah. This is it was good. It was good this week to revisit my. I was telling John before we recorded, like my slow dive medicine, all the shoegazing bands were just like.
I just want your bangs to be further in front of your
coming
eyes.
Coming back.
is this 15-year-old birch time?
No, it's actually college.
It's college birch. Yeah. Okay, but okay, so late 90s, early 2000s, Midwest.
Yeah.
This sound from the 90s is all over the Midwest.
Yeah.
God, I hated it.
Yeah. But they did it. I think they did it better.
Oh, yeah. No.
Here. Yeah, no. The originators.
OG Shoegaze is way better than, bullshit band in, Bobby's basement.
Yeah, for sure.
So many bullshit bands in my basement.
There were also good bands in Bobby's basement.
That is true. Yeah. I don't remember any of them because I was very sad and blackout drunk every day.
I was surprised to know, I guess, to know that this was, they knew they had a plan for all of this, right? So Bell, he said they had a concept. It's not a concept album, but they definitely had a concept for like what they wanted to do as a band, kind of how they wanted to present songs, how they wanted to, what sound they were getting across. So fully formed like concept from the get-go, even with the songs, they have songs like Seagull. They did a lot of water effects on there. And then there's like a song called Polar Bear. So they were evoking a certain thing that they were really going for in this album. And of course, the cover is very like... The
cover's really cool.
Reminiscent. Yeah, it's an...
Is it an uncrested wave?
Yes. Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And so this album came out in November of 1990. Between January and September of 1990, they released three different EPs leading up to the record. So when you're telling me that this is all planned out, like that fits right into the narrative. Like this was a full-on campaign,
Yeah. And they received accolades for it, for sure. What would you say? Head of Creation was talking how, he quipped that... The Oxford band had achieved overnight genius status, something that Primal Scream had taken 6 years to carve out. Essentially, like overnight, they were, critical darlings instead of, this long buildup. But it could have been, right place, right time and just having the right sound.
Had you heard of this band before?
Yeah, I mean, I had just from
not me
shoegazing.
Me neither.
Yeah. When I looked up, Trust me, I went to My Bloody Valentine, and right next on the list were Slow Dive, Medicine, Ride, and then there were a lot of more modern bands that we'll probably get to in the 2000s.
Oasis? Is that one of them?
They're spiritual successors. I mean,
they are spiritual successors for the creation.
Not only
records.
Spiritual successors, there's a bloodline. After Ride breaks up, Andy Bell joins Oasis as their bass player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The track that's in my ears right now Oasis sounds a lot like the track that's in my ears.
Polar Bear?
Yeah. This song sounds like future Oasis. How about that? There we go.
This just sounds like, when I heard
Or the entirety of the Brit pop, like fucking like
Stone
invasion.
Roses. Yeah. Like, absolutely. This is literally a Hand of Stone or whatever from Stone Roses. It's like, I couldn't get the connection out of my head.
Yeah, I mean, it flows into early emo, too.
Yeah.
I mean, like, The next song, Dreams Burn Down, is a lot like Sunny Day Real Estate. It sounds Sunny Day Real Estate clearly listened to these.
I am going to sample that opening drum track on there. It's quality. Nice.
On this track, on Polar Bear?
No, on the next one.
Oh, yeah.
Dreams Burn Down?
Yep.
Yeah, Rolling Stone called Nowhere a masterpiece. Guardian dubbed Ride teenage saviors of rock and roll.
I don't disagree, necessarily. But this has never been my jam as a just a subgenre. You're right. If it exceeds a certain decibel level on headphones, it sounds fucking amazing. Can you turn this up a little bit?
Yeah,
because if you listen to it flat, you're getting this kind of mishmash of guitar without enough to push the ears, and then the drums are on many of the tracks just crazy, stupid, simple.
Yeah.
It sounds almost dumb, just the toms fills. But then when you've got the pounding volume of it, then the toms cut through.
Yeah.
And it does something.
I love the little the drum how they mix it up on this.
Mm-hmm. Like, just imagine how bored all of these people look.
Yep. Reached number 11 in the UK charts.
That's crazy. That's
pretty major.
But yeah. Unfortunately, people say Nowhere was Ride's creative peak. They released two more albums, Going Blank Again and Carnival Light.
That's very funny that the cover of this album is an uncrested
wave. Yeah. Never got there.
Ride themselves started... They themselves thought that Carnival Light... Is that what's called Carnival Light?
Mm-hmm.
Or Carnival of Light? Which is it?
Carnival Light.
All right. The band themselves refer to it as Carnival of Shite.
Love it.
And then wasn't there Tarantula? Tarantula was like 96, I think.
Okay.
Right before they broke up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I found myself bopping to this pretty hard, though. This particular song.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dreams Burn Down.
Yeah, Dreams Burn Down.
Probably is cool.
Totally good.
People go gaga for that Vapor Trail, though. I guess they like the guitar tone on it.
Yeah, it's got a thick guitar. It's very
thick.
The fangle. The thick jangle.
It has a very pleasant melody.
Mm-hmm.
And then it has those strings at the end. You know, it kind of brings it all around. So, yeah, Dreams Burn Down is like early 2000s.
Oh, yeah.
Like Sunny Day. Those bands.
Right up in that wistful fangle.
Elliot.
Oh, yeah.
Local band Elliot.
Elliot.
Very much so, Elliot. Yeah.
They just put a show not too long ago.
They did, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What would this album sound like? Totally dry, zero reverb.
It would sound like a...
But you're just like, what are you guys even doing?
What is the other band that inspired Oasis? We just talked about them.
Some band that plays with no effects, but not the band No Effects.
Help me out here.
Happy Mondays?
I'm trying to remember the name of No Effects album.
The Laws.
The Laws. The Laws. They were great. Yeah.
This gave me Happy Mondays, Laws, Stone Roses vibes. I mean, but what they're doing obviously is taking the pop melodies that the Laws had and are like, all right, we're going to do that, but we're also going to take a slice from My Bloody Valentine and try to stick those together. It works.
So chronologically, who's...
My Bloody Valentine.
My Bloody Valentine is the first shoegaze.
My Bloody Valentine has released several albums at this point, but they have not yet released Loveless.
Right.
Are you sure about that?
Loveless is 91. This is 90.
Oh, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
But they did release record before this, which was... Shoegaze had been established. I mean,
they were releasing those LPs, Glider.
Yeah.
88, 89.
And Illumer. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Tremolo.
Yeah, Tremolo. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah, the Laws are great. You should listen to them.
I would. Yeah, I didn't even know.
You know one of the songs.
You do.
You know, okay. There She Goes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the Laws?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know the cover of it.
I was happy just to, sit back and chill out and listen to Ride this week.
Named after the style of cymbal, apparently.
Oh.
The Ride cymbal?
the ride cymbal.
Wow.
They said it evokes travel, and also they like ride cymbals.
Fair.
Okay. There are worse things to name your band after.
A few things about the songs. Seagull was based on the Jonathan Livings.
Not that fucking poem.
Yes.
Seriously?
The same motherfucker that did, like, the reason why, or one of the many reasons why that Bad Company record's so fucking terrible. That same fucking,
Jonathan Livingston Seagull by Richard Bach, which is a hippie classic that we've all read.
Had to read that in seventh grade. Mm-hmm. We all had to read it.
Yep. And then he says, again, they mixed in a little Stone Roses. And, of course, they alluded to, you know, Taxman off of Revolver by the Beatles.
How's that bass line go again? Oh, yeah, that's a one.
Yeah. We're having some trouble in the studio, too. And in a different place, they made a demo of that song in the real studio. And that's how they found the producer for the album. There was an EMI studio in London. They went to with that in a different place. And the house engineer, who was their age, got there and was mixing it. He was supposed to just do it in a day, but they got along so well with them. At the end of the day, they decided to ask him to produce the entire album. And it was Mark Waterman, who's gone on to produce loads of other bands. But he had this like way of creating a really long, stretched out, slightly Cure-esque feel on In a Different Place. And they just really liked it. Dreams Burn Down.
Ride as a band rejected the label shoegaze.
Yeah.
What do they like to be called?
New Romantic? They don't like to be labeled. Yeah. Hmm. Which is fair. That's fair.
I think a lot of bands at that time, when they were called shoegaze, they were just like, that's a terrible, like, no one knows what that means. Obviously, we can look back with hindsight, but a lot of people wanted to call it like dream pop or... Mm-hmm.
I think creatives don't like to be pigeonholed with they don't like a label stuck to them, which yeah. I absolutely respect that.
Really does elicit that Kate Bush feel, doesn't it? It's really just right in there.
The problem is that without a label, it's hard to market.
True.
You know, that's why they want to know what part of the record store to stick you in.
Yeah.
And if they can create new section. Yeah. It's a label problem, not an artist problem.
Yeah. You know why Dreams Burn Down, why it sounds like that? Like it sounds...
No, I
like
don't.
Like the drums. They rehearsed in a cavernous room in Oxford, super big natural reverb. So they fleshed out the arrangement based on that room.
Because it does sort of sound like when the levee breaks.
Yeah.
It's got a little bit of that. Poof.
So the huge drum sound is just... it is played in, you know, that big open area, and that's how they decide to create it.
And why I'm gonna get them drums, put them in a sampler, and never release anything.
Until you do your Sugar Ray Fly Mega Mix.
There you go. We're on that.
Surprise, fuckers. 1,002 episodes in is my Sugar Ray Mega Mix. It was all a long con.
Remember those internet videos, those Shreds videos, like Clapton Shreds?
Oh, yeah. Shreds.
Yeah. Loved it.
When I think of, like, taking a shoegaze band and taking all of the reverb and effects off it, I just imagine it sounds like
love it.
Killer drummer.
Real good.
Loved it.
Real good.
Lawrence, is it Colbert or Colbert? Can tell.
Colbert.
Goes to show. Yeah, whatever. say either one. We've already said one. You say the other. That way we can get screamed at two times.
Mm-hmm. Just trying to cover our bases.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought he was kind of holding a lot of he was keeping me in.
Totally.
For sure, mm-hmm. To this band. Like, I don't tend to, you know, go off in Oasis pop 60s, like throwback bands, although I think I'm coming around.
You've been on board since Soft Boys.
That's true. Soft Boys really, yeah.
They were great. Yeah.
That's really good. Although it's fallen off during
Lawrence Colbert, he was in Ride. He was also among other bands in, I don't know at what era he was part of these bands, but he was a member of Jesus and Mary Chain and also Supergrass. And he gets comparisons to Keith Moon.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Dude, solid.
Powerhouse drummer.
Yeah, it's weird to think of a drummer like that on top of like dreamy, wistful lyrics, but it's not always that way. I mean, sometimes they have different tracks,
but still important. You need to have something that like moves it forward.
Oh yeah, no, I mean it works. It's just it's an interesting sound.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. You got Bell there who was idolizing, you know, Johnny Marr from the Smiths, and
for good reason.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Apparently, that guy has the goods. I came to find out that Johnny Marr, he's going places.
But it is really cool. Yeah, you bring up a good point that, you know, he can play so good. Like, we're just listening to Decay, and, you know, he's bringing it with the drums. But on those slow songs, he can just crush it. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just sitting there, ka-thunk, ka-thunk, you know, like, yeah, like When the Levee Breaks.
Yeah, it's just bestial, like, caveman drums. Yeah. But it's awesome. But you have to have the volume up enough for it to make sense.
Yep. Totally.
Especially for my broken old ears.
Yeah. You just have to balance it out all the ringing.
There you go.
Where's my tuning fork? Get it in tune.
Yeah, how we all feel?
Man, I really liked it. I need to spend a little more time digging in, but it was surprising to be on the full positive for a shoegaze record. And, you know, if this is the second best shoegaze record, I guess it means that, you know, well, that implies more that, like, the, you know, Cream and the Top and the Rising and the Wheat from Chaff. This is just very good music, and yeah. I liked it a lot.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a full positive. It hits me right in the 2000s,
mm-hmm.
and those were pretty good times and pretty bad times, and that's what you want from music, is to take you through both. Yeah, I'd never heard of Ride. I'd never heard this album.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, again, listen to it loud enough, and it's really good.
Yeah.
Positive for me. Quick aside, speaking of the reminding you of the 2000s, are there still bands that are considered shoegaze bands 10 years later? Like,
yeah.
Like, is Hum shoegaze?
Ooh. That's a hard one. It's close. I mean, they play loud enough.
Man, that's like the loudest show I've ever seen.
Yeah. I don't know. What do you think?
Wait, is Hum the band that did the Counting Stars?
Yeah.
I mean, it means some different things. So I could say, you know, you could probably put them adjacent, if not directly in there.
It seems like they're disciples of, at least.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think most bands now don't say shoegaze because they put it as a time and a place.
Yeah.
Like, they say, this is shoegaze from this era to this era.
It would be like someone saying, oh, we're grunge.
Right.
But coming out like right now. And you're like, what? What are you talking about?
That makes sense.
But I think there are later bands that self-identify as, like, there's a band called Tokyo Shoegaze, I think, and they play shoegaze music.
So. Yeah. Positive, though?
Positive, yeah. Nice. Yeah, I enjoyed this.
Yeah.
What about you, Birch?
Positive for me, man. This is right in my
the house of wheels.
Yeah, right in my heart here.
Right in the soft spot in the top of my head.
Heart of stone.
Never fully healed.
Put on your helmet, Robbie.
That's right.
All right, get ready for another one about My Bloody Valentine. Love Less.
Right, can I assume that that would be considered the first if this is the second?
The best.
Yeah, it's got to be the best. It's the best.
I had so much to give, so much hope.